Welcome to Tentpole Trauma, the podcast where we look at movies that came with hype and high hopes, but left with crushing disappointment, either critically, at the box office, or both. Freed from the weight of expectations, we seek to examine these underperformers under a new light, parsing through the good, the bad, and everything in between with the hopes of gaining a better understanding as to why they failed to find their audience. Warning, there will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie that we're discussing today, I suggest you stop the podcast and go watch it. Then when you come back and listen, you'll get more out of the discussion. On this episode, we discuss Posse. Sebastian, and I'm here with Jennifer.
Hello.
And special guest VQ.
Woo! Hey, party people in the place to be.
Welcome back to the podcast, VQ.
Oh, thank you for having me back. Thank you. Thank you. Pardon me, y'all. Like I said before, man, I'm fighting the call, so, you know, we're going to make it do what it do.
VQ, do you want to talk a little bit about your podcast, Fear of a Black Film Critic?
Actually, I don't. No, no, I do. Yes, we just finished Me and Fully Love and my band Shad Brown. We just finished an episode on Belly, which is funny enough. It's a Tentpole Trauma too. Yeah. So that episode is out right now. So Spotify. I know last time I came over here, I said I was going to hit all other, you know, iTunes. None of that happened. So you can find me on Spotify there. You know, just follow, hit the play button, you know, and enjoy. You know, you may want to walk in slow motion after you listen to that episode, you know, get in that Hype Williams feel.
All right. Well, we are gathered here to talk about the film Posse, but I'd also like to talk a little bit about Black actors and Black filmmakers in the Western genre. Now, VQ, you have a little bit of a history with this movie and some other movies starring Black actors in the Western genre. Do you not?
Just a little. Not enough to be a historian, but I remember as a kid watching Buckin' the Preacher with Sidney Poitier and what's my man, Harry Belafonte, and Take a Hard Ride with Lee Van Cleef and what's my man, Jim Brown. Posse was probably my, I don't say introduction to Black Westerns. Obviously, I stated the first two, but I loved Posse when it came out. First of all, let me stop and go back for a second. After New Jack City, I had a newfound respect for Mario Van Peebles. Because up until then, Mario Van Peebles was the guy who made rapping. And rapping was not appreciated by anybody. So it was like, okay, so he directed New Jack City, which I absolutely love. And I said, okay, man, my dislike for Mario Van Peebles is starting to go away. Then the trailer for Posse dropped. I said, yo, I got to see this. And I remember seeing it, and I fell in love with it. I said, okay, you know, he's not so bad in this movie. I actually like Mario Van Peebles. You know, but really, I went there for one person, and that was Big Daddy Kane.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was on your show before, when we talked about Blade, Wesley Snipes to the big screen, Big Daddy Kane was that for hip hop. You know, he was regarded as this black sex symbol and whatever. He would refer to himself as the Richard Roundtree of rap. So I'm like, okay, so I got all my favorite hip hop artists, you know, looks action packed. Let's go. And so I remember seeing the movie and I'm like, yo, man, you know, so I'm talking to my friends and everything. Just see Posse. Oh, man, it was whack, man. I'm like, what? I was like, oh, man, it's whack, you know, man. What's all this music video stuff? And, and Jesse and the dude, and again, that the dude who played in rapping, why he in it? Why is he in it? Why he couldn't put Denzel or I'm like, look, man, the movie's phenomenal, but 20 plus years later, it's finally found its audience. I enjoy it. I still enjoy it to this day. Beautifully shot. Shout out to Marvin Van Peebles. You made two movies. The rest of your movies, I can't support your own family. I tried, but, you know, New Jack City and Posse, for me, are the two good movies. Well, great and good. Rest, but, yeah, I'm sorry, y'all. Posse's the shit, man. I love it. And thank you for having me on for Posse.
We had to have you on for Posse.
You're the man for Posse.
For me, it was like, you know, you remember, Sebastian, in the 90s, it was kind of like this whole thing of Westerns coming out. You had, of course, Unforgiven, Wild Bill, Geronimo, what's the other joint? Quick and the Dead, shout out to Sam Raimi. You had all these movies, all these Westerns coming out, and, you know, they weren't really doing well, with the exception of Unforgiven. But it was like Posse was like the movie that was, for me, I enjoy seeing black people, men and women and children, fighting together. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it was like, I can't believe that people was dissing it hard. I think a lot of it had to do with Marvin Van Peebles, unfortunately, you know.
There was, like you said, the sort of big name Westerns, right, like Unforgiven and stuff, but there was also like Young Guns, yeah, and Bad Girls. And I feel like a lot of people, when Posse came out, they were like, well, now we're getting the black Young Guns, right, or the black Bad Girls. Bad Girls was actually later, right, but you know what I mean? It was kind of that, like, oh, we're doing kind of trendy, like MTV Westerns, right, you know what I mean?
Right.
I did not see Posse when it came out. I was aware of it. Jen, you didn't see it when it came out either, did you?
No, I wasn't really. I'm a newcomer to enjoying Westerns now. I saw Young Guns and I saw Wyatt Earp and Tombstone, mm-hmm, and, you know, some of those or whatever, because they were like kind of big blockbuster films. But I'm a late comer to the Western and spaghetti Western world, but I'm all in now. I'm all in.
Right.
Yeah. And we've been doing a lot of Westerns lately. And so I had not seen Posse. And so I was like, well, we're doing Westerns, so I got to see Posse. And I got to say, I really like Posse.
Me too.
I like it way better than either of the Young Guns. Certainly, it's way better than Bad Girls. It's just really refreshing to see a predominantly black cast,
right,
in a Western for a change. You know, it's like, I mean, in the movie, the way this movie frames that conversation, I mean, it talks about how many black cowboys there really was in the Old West.
Right.
And then it sort of talks about how ignored that aspect of Western culture was from Hollywood in general, right? You know?
Right.
And the person that's talking about that is Woody Strode.
Yeah.
Woody Strode is the sort of bookend narration of this film. We're going to find out that he plays like the little kid. He's a little kid in the movie.
Right.
But Woody Strode was kind of the black actor of the classic Western period.
Right.
He's in Once Upon a Time in the West, which is a film that I absolutely love. He's in, mm-hmm, the opening sequence. Mm-hmm. He's one of the outlaws that is there to kill Charles Bronson,
right,
and fails.
Right.
But I mean, he's a legend.
He was in Kioma also.
I mean, he's in a ton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like the black Western actor of that classic era. And so, you know, Van Peebles paying kind of homage to him by having him in the beginning of the movie is, I think, really important historically.
Right. Dude's face. He has a great face. You know what I mean? When you look at those tight shots, and I was like, dude, this brother is like chiseled.
Yeah, he's got cheekbones. Yeah. Mad cheekbones.
Cheekbones for days. Yeah.
I think he even played football at one point.
Yeah, he started as a football player.
Mm-hmm. He's also great in Vigilante, but that's a whole other... Yeah, whole other genre. But he's great in that, though.
So, yeah, so this movie, as you've said, is directed by Mario Van Peebles, son of Melvin Van Peebles, who is in this movie as well. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he got his dad to record a song for the movie, and that got his dad kind of back into doing some music, which is kind of cool. And I got to say, just in general about this movie, I think the direction is pretty strong.
Right.
There's a lot going on visually that's really cool. I mean, he likes to use a lot of like canted angles, yeah, and there's a lot of movement with the camera, like Dutch angles and stuff. You can tell, like, artistically, you know, his voice is definitely there. But I mean, what we should talk a little bit about this cast,
right?
Because Tone Loc.
Let's do it.
I was hoping you'd do a little Loc.
Yeah.
yes. Tone Loc was the guy, man. What's interesting, though, Mario Van Peebles really cut his teeth in television. And, you know, he used to direct a lot of episodes for Wise Guy. You remember that show?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. 21 Jump Street. I think he even directed a show that he was in, Sonny Spoon. And it's funny that you see one of the characters in there, Stephen J. Cannell, was a producer of a lot of those shows and gave Mario really his shot. So
interesting.
Yeah. So he's directed a lot of those, cut his teeth in TV. But yeah, like you're saying, man, the movie is good looking. You know, I've been a big fan of Peter Menzies' cinematography ever since this movie. You know, I liked him in, of course, Die Hard with a Vengeance. Not so much. What's that movie with Antonio Banderas? I'm all going off a little bit, 13th or something.
13th Warrior?
I think he shot that movie too.
I actually like that movie.
All great looking movies. So to see Mario Van Peebles get a cinematographer like this is just amazing. I will give it to him. He's strong behind the camera. It's just, you know, I don't think Mario at the time had enough box office power to really get people in that audience.
Well, if we're going to talk about this now, I do have to say that I like Mario behind the camera. Yeah. He's a good looking man and he's not bad in the movie.
Right.
However, like if this was Wesley, come on.
Yeah.
Like this movie would be a stone classic. And yeah. I feel like he's kind of the thing holding it back by being our kind of main gunslinger. He's not bad.
Right.
I don't think he's bad. Like he's handsome. He delivers his lines fine. He's got a few good moments, I feel like.
Right.
But there's just something about him. He's too pretty.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, again, I've said rapping one time too many, but that has always been like a stain on him, a cloud he can't get away from, you know what I mean? And like you said before, man, he looks great for parts. You know, he's actually good in this, but it's just there's a wee bit of hammy corniness to him a little bit that you can't shake. And it's like, dude, is this movie about the posse or is it about you? Because he filmed himself great. He's just like, yo, look at my body, ladies and gentlemen. I mean,
and his dad's body.
Yeah, that's like,
hold on. I was like, Melvin is
ripped.
Melvin is ripped.
They're all male right there. But, you know, you know, Sweetback's Badass All, even is kind of like a Western, a contemporary or modern Western. Again, he's not bad in it, but you should have had somebody with a little more star power in that lead to really pull it off, to really get the audience in. Because unfortunately, that John Rappin' Hood, when I went to go see New Jack City and he was there and he was talking about, yo, man, I'm sorry, everybody. You know, I'm a little tired. I was up, you know, filming season 3 of Wu-Tang series. So, it, you know, Busta Rhymes was there. Redman was there. There was a big freestyle battle. So I had to record this, you know, because this is one of those moments that you just don't, you got to record, right? Because you have hip hop legends in the building. So he told the guy, everyone's like, oh, that's dope, right? So then he goes, yeah, I told those guys, don't make me pull out John Rappin' Hood. That audience went, zoop, got quiet, like, dog, why did you say that? Like, don't bring up
Things are going so well.
With you, you brought John Rappenhood. Man, you can't bring that up. So I'm sorry.
He's kind of the main hero of the movie, and it needs to be like an Eastwood kind of performance.
Right.
And I feel like he's trying to do that, but he just doesn't have that sort of gravitas. Whereas if you had somebody like Wesley, like he could have just destroyed it.
Right.
I mean, it definitely does not ruin the movie. I think the movie is an entirely enjoyable experience. It's just one of those things where I'm like, oh, I wish he was just behind the camera.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other cast, though. We got Tiny Lister in here.
Compton. Hub City. Rest in peace, Tiny Lister.
I think he's great in this, and he's kind of playing against type because he's a big guy, but he's sort of afraid. At one point, he's going to freak out because he needs to get in a coffin, and he's got like claustrophobia. So Jesse, the character Mario Van Peebles is playing, like knocks him out with a rifle and puts him in the coffin.
Right.
It's really a sweet Tiny Lister performance. At one point, he sort of falls in love with the singer in the saloon.
Vesta.
They have a sweet kind of little moment there. I mean, I love Tiny. I just love seeing him in anything. So I'm happy he's here.
And you know what's crazy? He's not a bad actor. He just get typecast as, you know, the tough guy, but it's to the point of like, you know, almost like, well, shit, he was a wrestler at one point, Zeus. But it's just always been, he's in Zeus mode before he became Devo. He's like, all the time. But yeah, I think Duke can act. If you don't believe me, I think he was good in The Fifth Element.
Oh yeah, he's great in that.
Yeah, you know, and he's the president of the, what, of the universe?
Yeah.
Hey now. So, you know, Compton again, you know. But yeah, he was awesome in that. And rest in peace to play the saloon singer. I had a real big crush on her, Vesta Williams. She was a fantastic.
Oh, she died?
Yeah, she was a fantastic singer. So
her voice.
Yes. Throughout the 80s, you had to play some Vesta. It was Anita Baker, Regina Bell, Vesta Williams. You had to have her in your tape collection or your records.
I didn't know her, but I know Anita Baker. And I was like, this sounds like Anita.
Right.
I like Tone Loc in this, too. I mean, I know Tone's not known for his acting. And it does feel like they take him out of the movie early.
Yes.
We lose him so early on. I was like, what? You lost him? I mean, we barely got started and he was already wiped out. But I was happy to see him, too. I thought he was good in this.
Yeah, he has the voice, man. It's like taking out Ajax early. He was the Ajax of Posse. It's like, oh my God, man, you know, you need your muscle, you know, but it was one of those moments where, you know, when he was knocked off, it was like, oh damn, man, here we go. To me, the standout performance, one of them was Billy Zane. That crazy mother.
Oh yeah.
He is so good at being terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Titanic. I mean, there's so many different things where he is just the worst and he's so good at
it. The whole operation was about the gold. You know, sneaking behind enemy lines to get the guns. And really, it was about the gold. It wasn't about those damn guns. He knew that that's what he really wanted. But there was a moment in there where I was looking at this, you know, and I said, you know, Billy Zane, brother, I think you had your eye on more than gold. I think you were looking at Mario. Because it was, I mean, it was like he treated, you knew he wanted the money. But this guy was so obsessed with Jesse Lee, he turned into Eurythmics. That dude traveled seven seas to get Jesse Lee. It was like, oh, like a jilted lover. I'm like, bruh, is this really about gold? Or you got a little crush on Mario? Little suspect there.
Well, and we need to talk a little bit about the structure of this movie. We'll get into this after we cover the cast. But like, this movie is basically two movies in one.
Right.
You know, there's the story of these Buffalo soldiers, these soldiers fighting in the Spanish-American War in Cuba, right?
Right.
These guys have all, for one reason or another, been put into prison, and their option is fight in this war or go back to prison or we're going to hang you or whatever.
Right.
So that's our kind of like setup. And so our initial group is Mario Van Peebles as Jesse Lee. We've got an actor, Charles Lane, who I'm not familiar with. VQ, do you know about Charles Lane?
Yeah, he was a filmmaker, too. I can't think of his first movie, but he directed a movie called True Identity or Identity Crisis, one of the two. And that was it. But he came around the time, around that late 80s, 90s period where, you know, Spike was getting his rep, you know, Hudlin Brothers were coming in, and he made this movie that was very forgettable. You know, and then he did another movie that was shot in black and white. The name escapes me, but yeah, he was part of that whole black filmmaker collective at that time. You know, in fact, everyone in this movie was basically in it, from the Hudlin brothers, Charles Lane, even Cy Richardson, who wrote the screenplay. He played it, had a little part in it. He played the pastor that got killed during the raid.
Oh, okay.
And for those who don't know who Cy Richardson, if you're a fan of Repo Man, Straight to Hell. He's a brother with the only brother in there with the black suit and white shirt and black tie. Quentin, I'm looking at you. You know you stole that. Yeah, it was a lot of filmmakers in here. Paul Bartel.
Yep.
But yeah, that was the only thing. Identity Crisis, or True Identity. I think that's the name.
Right on. Yeah, he's playing the character of
Wheezy.
Wheezy.
Yeah.
Sort of unctuous. At one point, Billy Zane, he calls him a Motisa. A Motisa tribe.
Yeah.
Because he's bringing Billy Zane his tea and he says Motisa.
Yeah.
And so that's the racist sort of way he puts him down.
Yeah.
But he's kind of a comedic presence right in this movie. Like, I don't know if all of his lines totally land, but he's, you know, he's an interesting presence. I like him.
He definitely kind of reminds me of, dare I say, Tuco, or one of those type of characters in Westerns where, is he really on your side or he's really benefiting his pockets?
Right.
Because he looks like he'll sell you out in a heartbeat as long as it's beneficial to him, as long as he keeps him alive and puts some money in his pocket. Yeah. But his character was definitely the comic relief in the movie for me.
Yeah, he's got that scene where he's going to get them passage out by having them hide in coffins, and he's getting his share of the gold so that he can buy them coffins or whatever. And it's a little sketchy. Like, people aren't totally trusting him.
Right. You think?
Well, and he's also kind of, you know, I mean, we see that one scene that does pay back finally later where he's trying to learn how to throw a knife.
Right.
Because throughout the movie, like, he's having to get saved all the time because he's just not a fighter. Like, he's not, all these guys are like, they know what they're doing. They can handle themselves. And he's like constantly getting saved by somebody else.
Well, he's small too. So they're always pairing him with Tiny Lister, who's huge,
right?
Just to contrast the big and small kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the only man to crack on Tiny Lister's eye to his face.
I was kind of shocked at that line.
Oh, yeah, because he said with the goldfish, yeah, the
goldfish,
right?
In it. Yeah, so that was pretty bold, man. So shout out to Wheezy. You know, you looking at death in the face, basically.
Well, we can't go any further without talking about Stephen Baldwin.
Okay.
Because what a face performance this is in the movie. I mean, they play with the fact that he's got that crazy grin, you know, and they give him a gold tooth at one point because he's got like a rotten tooth.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I like him in this or I don't. He's such an off-putting presence that I can't say for sure whether it works or not.
He's the hated Baldwin. He's one step above Daniel.
That ain't saying much.
Yeah, it's not. But I thought he was good at it. You know, I can't say for anything else, but he, you know, is perfect for a Western setting.
Yeah.
He has that Western face. You know what I mean? Now, Fled, that's something else. But I enjoyed him in this movie, you know, that tooth, though. My goodness.
Immediately, that's the first thing he did when he got to New Orleans, right, and he had a little bit of money, was he comes out of the dentist with tooth to spink.
Yeah. 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 I'm a, you know, gamble with this. Nah. Don't put your teeth up on the table. Nah, that's not fly, partner. We need greenery, not gold.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with him. I mean, I was fine with him too. He just wasn't, he wasn't one of my favorite characters. He was just—he's fine. He's doing his job, but I didn't dislike it. But he wasn't my favorite to watch, I guess I should say.
He's just so mugging through this movie, and it's just his face. His face is just so goofy. He's just got a goofy face, and they really lean into that with his performance. And, you know, then at the end, he gets shot, and you're supposed to be sad, I guess. I didn't even know for sure if he was dead.
I did. I said it. I was like, they killed Stephen Baldwin.
Well, they beat him to death. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, no, I don't think he's dead. And I'm like, he's laying there with his eyes open and he's not moving. I think we're done.
That's it.
So, yeah, I mean, what we've got here is kind of like two movies in one, right? Like, though, we've got one movie that's dealing with this posse who has escaped from the Spanish-American War with a bunch of gold, right?
Right.
And they're being chased by Billy Zane. And so, okay, so Billy Zane is the villain. He's going to chase them throughout the states, I guess. The first place they land is in New Orleans. So we get kind of like a bunch of scenes in New Orleans. And I feel like the movie kind of does this, which is sort of interesting, is that it like parks in a location for like 20 minutes. And so, you know, we get a whole bunch of scenes in a certain location. Then they kind of move on and do some traveling, and then we're somewhere else.
Right.
I mean, that's sort of a standard Western kind of plot structure, but it's interesting because we go to a bunch of different places. I mean, we start in Cuba. Now we're in New Orleans.
Right.
I liked it. That was one of the things I actually appreciated about this, is because he covers a lot of ground, because they do. They're Cuba, New Orleans, and then they're like heading out west. They go through like a section that's real snowy at one point, which I was like, I always like to see the snowy Western.
Very Corbucci.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, we get to see, again, the railroad getting built. And also, you know, we're getting a lot of flashbacks and stuff with our main character and seeing different things too. So yeah, I like that he covered this much ground.
I gotta say, the way the flashbacks are dealt with is a little confusing. Like, I got what was going on, and there's a lot of sort of artistry in them. Like, you know, the flashback will start in the present and then he'll fade all the color out of it, and then we're into the past or whatever.
Right.
And I like all the backstory, but I feel like the way the information is dealt out is a little confusing. I'm like, okay, so wait, what happened? You know, his father was a preacher, right? We get the great
Robert Hooks
as his dad. We're seeing this township that was set up, and these white people came in. They were going to build a school because his dad's a preacher, but he values education. What is the slogan that's on the church there?
Education is freedom.
Right.
Obviously, the white people in the area don't like that, and so they kill his dad and tie him to the frame of this church and stuff. We also then later sort of get some information about this romance that he had with this Native American woman who is played by
Sexy Sally. Sally Richardson.
So pretty.
Man, listen. It was one moment where I'm like, okay, Holly, let me not look at you for a day. So it was like, okay, Sally Richardson, yeah, she was definitely a cutie pie in this movie.
And we get quite a sex scene between her and Mario. That's pretty hot.
It's smoking.
We're seeing some full-on naked bodies.
It burned a reel. It was...
Like, I mean, you know, I'll tell you, like, I've given Mario a little bit of a hard time, but he's looking good when he's naked with a really attractive woman.
You know, he like directed this.
Oh yeah. He was there all set on every day. But let me say this here, because there's one character that you did forget.
Well, I was just going to say, the big addition we get to the crew in New Orleans is Father Time.
Time. Yes. Big Daddy Kane, Brooklyn, is in effect. Full EFFECT. Listen, you want to talk about a guy who can not only just rap, dance and rap, and have powerful breath control. This dude, like Big Daddy Kane, was destined to be a superstar. Unfortunately, you know, he made some albums that weren't necessarily great. But seeing him in this movie, this is really why I went to the movie. I was like, oh my God, Big Daddy Kane in this? This is like rap royalty here. You know what I mean? So seeing him in this movie, I remember sitting in the audience and just the audience, especially sisters too, was like, ooh. Was just like in love with some Big Daddy Kane. So, I mean, Big Daddy Kane, like looking back, he was the man. Like he is the father of Brooklyn MCs, so to speak, right? Like you, I know I may catch flack for saying this, but whether it's Biggie, whether it's Jay-Z, all have to pay homage to Big Daddy Kane because he was that dude. And to see him in this film, I was just like, man, this is so amazing. And here's the thing. He was actually pretty good.
He was good.
He was one of my favorite characters to watch in this. I love Father Time.
There's a bunch of things going on with him that's cool. I mean, just the design of his character is interesting because he's like a gambler. Stephen Baldwin meets him by buying his way into a game of cards. And, you know, there's all these interesting characters at the table, but Father Time is like the last one he meets. And Father Time, you know, is sort of a gentleman, right? Like he's dressing fine and he always carries his watch. And what is it that he says there?
Tick tock, tick tock. Yeah. And so when he meant that was your ass. Because, but I mean, he was so playing with it though, man. I mean, seeing him with the vest and the hat, I was like, oh shit, this dude is going to be up there, man. Like he be that dude, but you know, things happen, man, unfortunately.
Yeah. I would have thought he would have gone on to do more because he clearly can act. He's got a real presence. He looks great on camera. Mm-hmm. It's a mystery why he didn't go on to do more acting.
I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, some choices he made in terms of his career or building his brand that the streets was kind of like, you know, it's kind of a foul ball what you did there, family. So, but yeah, definitely. I wish he would have gone on to do more movies, man. You know, other than Meteor Man.
Oh, he's in that.
He's in that with blonde hair. And that was one of the foul balls right there. It's like, oh, wait, man, who's with you? Man, Big Daddy. No, not the blonde hair brother. No. But, shout out to Kane.
Yeah, his character is great. I really enjoyed him. So yeah, he gets kind of pulled along for the ride because Billy Zane shows up and starts causing problems. And Big Daddy's sort of thrown in with Stephen Baldwin. I guess he's just kind of guilty by association, right?
Right.
I mean, it is an ensemble piece. I know we talked a lot about Mario, but to his credit, he does hand a lot over to the cast. He's not just hogging up all the spotlight.
I think you definitely get to have a lot of time with everybody except for Tone Loc. Right. I'm still a little upset about that. I'm like, the picture shows the six people in the posse, and we lose him. We lose him so fast before we even get into everything else. But I mean, he was good and crazy in New Orleans. I was like, this is a sign of somebody who's going
to
die.
Well, and also in that scene, he's like, he's supposed to be drunk, but he's like playing around with like a feather boa. And like,
no, that's what I said. I was like, he was clowning and he was just, it was like, he had a target on his back. Mm-hmm. He was going to get, I knew his time was short, but I'm just saying it was like, here's the posse. I'm like, but it's not really. It's just five. It's not six.
I was wondering if maybe Mario is like, I don't know if we can keep Tone on the set this whole time.
Right. You know, it's one of those things as, you know, if you're, you know, kind of like I said about Ajax, if you're on a mission as a soldier, a warrior, wherever, you have to be focused. And there's going to be those ones that fuck up, get off code and do something to jeopardize the mission. And you have to have that sacrificial character on there, right? So right, yeah. I think Tone Loc, you know, unfortunately, I would have loved to have seen him. But it's just trying to prove a point like, hey, you know what? Anybody can get it.
Even you, Tone.
Even you, Tone. Even you.
Funky Cold Medina.
Did the wow thing on my leg. But you didn't pause.
Oh, man. Your tone is on point.
Your tone is so good.
Hey, you know, I've been practicing before I got all trying to get the.
You've got Tone's tone.
Yeah, man. You know? I felt like Tone.
If these are two movies, and that's how I kind of see it, which movie do you like better? The posse of evading Billy Zane or the Jesse getting revenge going back to the town story?
Ooh.
I like revenge.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go revenge too. This is where if I had to choose between Posse and Django Unchained, because I watched a little bit of that too yesterday, I kind of felt like what Quentin did was drop the ball. Mario Van Peebles, when he killed not only the corrupt sheriff and Billy Zane, it was justified. He did it obviously on his own, but he had the community help him as well, right, to fight this battle, which is very important and is very empowering.
What I do kind of like about Posse is it starts off about him getting revenge, you know, because there's these white characters who were involved in the killing of his father, right?
Right.
And he gets revenge on them pretty early on, except for the one guy who's the sheriff of the other town, right? We've got two towns in close proximity, and we're going to learn that there's going to be a railroad coming through the town that's predominantly black. And that's, I forget the name of the town.
Freedomtown. Yeah, Freedomville.
Freemanville. So it's like free man, meaning freed slaves. Like Freeman was a common last name. I believe in Django, his name is Freeman.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So there's these two towns, and one is kind of like been the dream of his father, which is a predominantly black town, and they're all black businesses and everything. But we do have kind of a conspirator there, the character of Carver, played by Blair Underwood, who Jen and I were noticing, like, man, Lakeith Stanfield, like, Blair Underwood looks like him in this movie.
Blair Underwood at this age, at this time, I was like, if they made this movie again, that would be Lakeith Stanfield, because he looks just like, he's got the same, like, mouth and stuff. And then it took me a minute even, because I was like, later on, I go, oh my God, that's Blair Underwood. That's just a young Blair Underwood.
Yeah, and let me tell you, this movie made me appreciate Blair Underwood as an actor. Because up until then, you know, I knew him as
L.A. Law.
L.A. Law, right? But before then, he had the nerve to play Russell Simmons or Russell Walker in Crush Groove. So it was like, okay, yeah. And he was kind of corny in that. And that corniness kind of carried over until, and then, you know, I say, possibly, I was like, you know what, damn, he's a fucking good actor. He's a real good actor.
He is really good in this.
But actually, there's two sellouts in this movie. We know Blair Underwood, but that one brother who's going around telling Louis Jordan was going that, hey, Jesse Lee's in town. So there's two co-conspirators in here.
Right.
But yeah, I thought he was a Blair Underwood did a fantastic job in this movie, man.
Right, and he's sort of positioned as this friend of Jesse's, right?
He's
this old friend, and he's even got his eye on Jesse's girl. It's a little unclear as to how long Jesse's been gone. Like, so he's been arrested, and we're to presume he got thrown into the military, right? So, yeah. I mean, I think we're only supposed to think this has been a couple of years, right?
Like, right.
10 years on, you'd think a lot more would have happened. However, the town does seem to be like really built up more than it was.
Right.
The flashbacks get a little confusing as to like what happened. Like it kind of makes it seem like the town got totally destroyed, but then we find out, no, it's actually been sort of thriving. But this one guy, Bates, played by Richard Jordan, you know, he's trying to basically run them all out of town, get them all the people to give over their deeds. And Blair Underwood's the one like buying the deeds from the people who are leaving. So he's going to be profiting and then splitting those profits with this evil white sheriff guy. So the whole thing, it goes from being a revenge story to now it's really about saving the town.
Right.
And I like that because it's more than just his own personal vendetta.
Right.
When he first starts going through the town, that's when I was realizing too, because from the flashbacks, I wasn't sure how bad it got. I mean, I knew his dad had been killed, but I didn't know like if anybody was still left from that town at all. I didn't know if it all got wiped out, but then we're going through the town and I was like, oh, there's Isaac Hayes. I'm like, oh, Pam Grier's still alive too. And I was like, so I was happy to see that, you know, that that hadn't completely been annihilated. But yeah, I agree. I don't know how much time had passed because it seemed to be, the town was in good shape at that point when they were coming in and everybody, you know, was bustling and things were going on. That sheriff, by the way, in the other town, I was just like, God, this guy is, his face, he just looks so so evil. He just is such a bad man.
Yeah.
He died the year this movie came out of brain cancer.
Yeah.
Yes, awful.
I love him in Logan's Run. He's great in that movie. I mean, I've seen him in other stuff.
The Friends of Eddie Coyle.
Right on. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Richard Jordan. I said Louis Jordan. I'm sorry, I got the saxophone. It's in my mind right now. Sorry about that. Yeah, Richard Jordan. But yeah.
He plays a great villain. So
such a good villain.
You love to hate him.
His bad twin is Richard Lynch, though.
Totally. The more burned twin.
My God. That man's face. It's very reptilian. If he dies, make him a belt. Well, is he gone? Oh, pardon me, y'all. Yeah, that face was. Whew.
How do you guys feel about Melvin Van Peebles as Papa Joe in here?
I think he's fine. I mean, I already commented on his physique.
You think he's fine?
I do think he's fine. Well, I just was like, whoa, Daddy Van Peebles, yeah. Like. He was just so cut. It was a shock. But no, I think he's fine. He plays Lana's dad, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Like, yeah. So, but yeah, he's like, I thought it was funny. Mario Van Peebles is like, you know, here, why don't you go do some gambling and leave me alone with Lana for a while or whatever. And he's like, all right.
Damn, I know, Mario, that line has not held up very well.
I got to say, though, like there is a kind of problem with having these kind of two movies in one. And that is that a lot of the characters end up kind of getting short thrift. I mean, we've got friggin' the Queen in here.
Pam.
Yeah, Pam's in here. And she doesn't get to do shit.
I don't think she even has a line. Does she even get to say anything?
She does.
In the town, you know, the little town meeting that they had towards the end, her and Isaac Hayes talk. Even Nipsey Russell, dude, this one thing I have to give Mario credit for. He gives present and past a shot. Like, he's putting everybody in this movie. Nipsey Russell? Wow. Only thing that comes up, right. For a while, you know, who else? Pam Grier, Isaac Hayes, the one brother, I can't think of his name, but he was in The Spook Who Sat by the Door. He was in this movie. It was just like, damn, man. I mean, you giving everybody some work, and I have to commend him for that. Mm-hmm. You know, rapping aside, but it was like, yo, man, I mean, at least you're giving second life to many actors and actresses who probably haven't been on screen in years.
Well, and this was before Pam had her Tarantino come back, so.
She was here and there and things. You know, I remember Above the Law and all that, but yeah, she'll pop up somewhere, but not like Jackie Brown. She had the whole entire movie herself.
But yeah, so this kind of leads us to our big gun battle at the end. Billy Zane does come back into the movie. Again, this is one of those things that is sort of rough about having these two different movies, because we've essentially had two different villains, right? For the first part, we've got Billy Zane, and then for the second part, we have Richard Jordan. But they do eventually come together. They bring it all back, so that's good. Mm-hmm. To your point, VQ, it is ridiculous the extent in which Billy Zane has gone to. Like, I mean, I know they're saying that by using the gold, that's how he's tracking them to this town. I mean, maybe he knew about this town, Jesse's involvement in this town or whatever, but it's like Billy Zane is just not letting this go. He's like got horses and trains and all this shit.
Right. And the reason why I say that too, I know it was kind of funny or whatever, but look how he is treating Sally Richardson in the movie towards the end when he has her tied up. It's like, how dare this woman come in between you and I, Phil? I'm like, you know, I was like, okay, Billy, yo, man, brother, you know, you know what I'm saying? Because it ain't about the gold no more. Let me say this, now it's fresh in my mind. What's that werewolf movie from back in the day with Stephen King?
Silver Bullet.
Yeah. Everett McGill, you're getting ready to have an accident, Marty. You know, I was like, oh, dude, he could have been the werewolf. But yeah.
Didn't Mario Van Peebles have like a werewolf cop movie or something like that?
Oh, man. Let me tell you, classic. I love Full Eclipse. People hate on that movie.
Full Eclipse, right.
I got to hand it to Mario on that one, too. That is a total guilty pleasure for me. X-Men Cops. I love that movie. You know, people rag on and be like, oh, man, really? You bugging, man. I'm like, no. Full Eclipse is the shit. Back in 1993? Oh, man. I was like, oh, this is bomb. And I didn't know nothing about John Woo at the time. So seeing the two guns and sliding across the floor, man, I was like, oh, yeah. I'm going to set aside my Mario dislike, and I'm going to give him a pass on this one.
I think you like Mario quite a bit, VQ.
No. I think
you've forgiven him for...
No, it happened Highlander 3.
Yeah.
It was, and Gunman, it was like, ah, man, dude, you dropping the ball, my family. You
don't like Solo?
Stop it. Mario, man, Mario, I mean, you just, boom, you sinking them, and then all of a sudden, brick. So it's like, oh man, dog, I'll switch you up until Gunman and Islander 3. But I got so far off. I'm sorry.
Let's talk a little bit about the big shootout here at the ending. I mean, we get the classic Gatling gun, right?
Oh yeah.
But I wanted to just also pay a little compliment to Billy Zane at the end with the eye patch.
Right.
This time, and I said to Sebastian too, I was like, I'm taking him much more seriously now. He's like got a, you know, his facial hair is kind of growing out, and he's got the Everett McGill eye patch on, and he just looks a little more rough around the edges than he did when he was back in Cuba at the beginning. And I was like, he's like this dandy army man or whatever. Like, you know, he's getting his portrait painted while the whole thing's going on. And I was just like, who could take this guy seriously at all?
He's definitely in love with himself. That's for sure.
Yes.
Well, cause he's doing paintings of himself. Right. And everything.
But yes.
You know, he's so unglued towards the end. He don't care about none of that anymore because his pride is hurt. You know, he's like, how dare this, you know, saying, whoa, 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 get past me and beat me. So I can't let this guy who I think is beneath me racially, right? So I have to get even. So his whole obsession becomes like, what's that story? Moby Dick, Captain Ahab, was it?
That's Moby Dick, yeah.
Yeah, he's obsessed with trying to bring down Jesse Lee.
Yeah, Jesse Lee is his white whale.
His black whale.
Is
yeah, yeah, right. But I think he, you know, he is definitely, I think there's some crush there that Billy Zane
has. He's obsessed.
Word up.
I kind of cracked the code, or I had a friend crack the code for me on Billy Zane. I love Billy Zane, and I'll watch anything that he's in.
Right.
And, you know, obviously he plays a really good villain and all that. But I was always just kind of wondering, like, what is it about Billy Zane that makes him so watchable? And it's his line readings are always weird and kind of like not what you think they're going to be. And that's like what it is about him that is sort of so captivating, like even when he's playing this villain. And I think that's kind of tapping into what you're saying, VQ, about like his obsession with Jesse and how it's like possibly sexual. You know, it's like it's because the Billy Zane brings that kind of weird energy to every single role. Like even like Titanic, he's being just like the cad, but the way he does it, you just want to watch the guy be bad, you know?
Right.
Demon Knight.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that performance is just
so good.
So insane and fun to watch, you know?
Yep.
Hold down, pull down thing. The whole thing he does.
Like, yeah.
I'm in Zane for Zane.
You are.
And even in movies that aren't good that he's in, he still gives a 100. You know, even those bad sniper sequels, you know, he I think he's in a couple of those, but I'm like, damn, he's still giving a solid performance.
So, yeah, let's talk about this big, you know, every Western's got to kind of end with its big action shootout. How do you feel Mario handles the sort of action choreography here with the gunplay and all that?
Very well. But let me shout out to two of this kind of goes back to Pam Grier for a second. Bob Miner is in this movie and is the lead stunt choreographer of this movie. His stunt choreography is amazing. And shout out to Tony Brubaker, too, who's also comes underneath the whole Benny Dobbins, Craig Baxley school of stuntman. So the action in here, that final guns battle is awesome. The Gatling gun, the shooting him through the saloon door, it's handled pretty tight. Even though there are sometimes it's kind of lose focus on like, okay, who are people shooting at times? But the final gun battle between Billy Zane and Mario Van Peebles is probably the best.
I love it when he stabs him up against the sword and everything.
Oh,
I think all the fighting and stuff is good, and I think most of the gunplay is pretty decent. I feel like there's kind of a little bit of an editing issue with this movie. Like sometimes I don't feel like it's cut as smoothly as it could be, and it gets a little confusing. I do feel that, like, for the most part, it's all pretty solid. But, you know, I think it could be just a little bit better.
We didn't talk about earlier, but I like that he melts down the six bullets from the gold.
Yeah.
To get the demons right. of the people. And I like the way that that's shown because it's part of the flashback as well. But when we, you know, when we get one of these guys with the gold bullet and then we see like the flashback to them like laughing as they're killing his dad or whatever, I thought that was done well.
So. I liked it, but it didn't really ever get fully explained. Like, right. did he really need to shoot those guys with gold bullets or right. would have regular bullets have done the trick?
No, they needed gold bullets because they were demons. They were demons.
But they weren't really. I mean,
well, whatever. They weren't demons in the sense of, you know, paranormal activity or whatever. It wasn't
look,
that kind
I need
of demon,
my demons
were...
to be clarified.
You know what that kind of reminded me of? Do you guys remember that spaghetti western with Thomas Milan, Django, If You Shoot, Kill? I think that's the name of it.
We have it. We have not watched it yet. We've been going through a lot of the Corbucci stuff. I know that's okay. not a Corbucci, but
right.
that one, I've heard that one's crazy, and that's on the list to watch.
I wouldn't be surprised if Mario watched that movie, because in that scene, or one of the scenes, the hero of the movie takes this silver and he melts it down into bullets. And he goes around killing individuals who set him up for this robbery and left him to die. So I'm wondering, you know, so either Cy must have seen that movie or Mario Van Peebles must have seen that movie and put that in there because it's very similar.
Well, one thing I've learned from watching a lot of Westerns and listening to a lot of commentaries is that when people take on a Western, it's sort of seen as part of the tradition. You want to honor other Westerns and you want to put in those references. Like, it's not considered copying. It's considered right. like, no.
It's homage.
You right. do that on purpose. You homage that on purpose. So I think 100% to your point, somebody involved in this movie saw that and were like, hey, you know what would be cool? What if we pay homage to that Django movie? It's all about honoring the tradition. It's like you take on the mantle of making a Western, then you want to pay homage to those who have come before. That's
right, right.
And I think Mario does that to the, mm-hmm. his credit. I think there's a lot of scenes in this movie that are scenes that you'd recognize from other Westerns, but done his own way. I mean, mm-hmm. just the fact that it's a mostly black cast right there, I mean, you're doing something different. Let me ask you this, VQ. Have you checked out The Harder They Fall?
I did.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was okay. I only watched it one time, and that was enough for me.
Yeah, I didn't like it the first time I watched it, but then I rewatched it, and yeah. I was like, okay, there's stuff in here that I like.
If I had to compare this and The Harder They Fall, I'm going back with Posse. I like my Westerns rough and gritty, yeah. not cute. Send all hate mail to VQ, as I always do. Me and my co-host talked about this too. Shout out to my brother, man. I'm not the biggest fan of reggae. So hearing reggae in a Western, I was like, oh, bruh, that took me out. But yeah, I didn't buy Keith. I can't say pronounce it. Was it Lakeith Stansfield? That's the brother's name.
Lakeith Stansfield.
You know, yeah, Lakeith yeah. Stansfield. You know, San Bernardino in house. Yeah, I wasn't feeling him. I thought it was okay. I give it the E for effort, man. I'm glad they made it a black Western. I appreciate it, but it's not a Western that I will go to. Welcome to Preacher, I will go to. Take a Hard Ride, I will go to. Fred Williams' Boss, you fill in the blank, I ain't gonna say it, and was awesome. Posse, good. Hell, even Silverado, even though it's not an all-black cast, but, you know, Danny Glover's in it. But I can't, you know, The Harder They Fall, it was too cute.
Yeah, it's very clean seeming, and, like, the sets really feel like sets. Like, right. I noticed the Western town in that. It almost seems like they just had the frontages, and there wasn't right. anything else. And I feel like it was almost like a choice. Like, you can definitely tell the guy, another director, I'm forgetting his name now, but
like Samuel James, something like that. James Samuel, something like that. Yeah.
James Samuels, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I really like Kang there. What's his name? Jonathan Majors.
Yeah, I do like him.
I love Idris.
Regina King.
Regina King, obviously. Love. Like those three, I love them.
Right.
Seeing them in a Western is just, you know, fun. But I agree with you. There's a lot about it that I kind of was just like, eh.
You know, for me, Jonathan Majors was good. Delroy Lindo, who played Bass Reeves in there, right?
Yeah, he's good.
Who else? I thought even Deion Cole did a good job. But there was a lot of other people that were casted. I mean, are you casting because you think they're good for the parts? Obviously, that's why you casted them. But like Zazie Beetz, I'm not putting in a Western. you know, I didn't buy her beating up Regina King. I'm not buying it. I'm not. You know, it's a lot of people love it. I thought it was okay. It could have been a little bit better, though. But I think out of the two, Posse would probably be my go-to first.
It's no Posse.
It's no Posse.
Well, do you guys have anything else to say about Posse? Jen, do you have any last thoughts about Posse?
At the end, that knife throwing does pay off because he does get that. He gets that one. We didn't even talk about the creepy blonde
right.
guy.
Oh, right,
like,
yeah.
He's so creepy. He kind of looks like Riff Raff from Rocky yeah. Horror or something. I don't know what's going on.
I don't think
he's
I've ever seen that guy before. And if I have, I didn't recognize him because of the way he looks in this movie.
I don't think he has a line in the movie either. He's just around being a creep with Billy Zane.
He's just the main henchman guy who you notice because he looks so weird.
I mean, it's a look. It's good. But yeah, he finally gets his knife thrown right. for that. And everybody else, I think, gets killed except for Mario Van Peebles in the Posse.
Well, does Tiny Lister die at the end?
Yeah.
No, he makes it.
No, he says, you're right. He says you're going to be okay because he has the book that blocks the bullet.
Right.
But he'd gotten shot somewhere else, but maybe during the other fight or something. But Mario Van Peebles is like, you're going to be okay.
It's a flesh wound.
What do you think the meaning of that poem that he's reading throughout the movie?
Woo, poetry, brother.
You don't have a take on it, VQ?
I'll do, but not at this particular moment. Give me some time. I'll get back to you.
The poetry of what he's actually saying, I'm not so certain about, but what I thought, and especially having the little boy reading it, and then we're going back to full circle at the end with the narrator being the little boy,
right.
is just the importance of telling the story and sharing the history, because
right.
this history does not exist in white history.
Right. Exactly.
Like, it's like, and that's what's, you know, up on the screen at the end is like, hey, there was all these cowboys right. and nobody's talking about
and
it.
And black settlers.
Yes, exactly. And getting screwed over because of the grandfather clause and all, you know, it's like telling that story.
Oh, that grandfather clause is some bullshit.
That's some such bullshit.
Oh, and that was just one of many that screwed black people over. And I'm glad you brought that up because it's interesting too, because that one villain who stereotypically he's dressed like a Native American, but he's a white dude. He's a pretendian. he's a pretendian. But you know, he's what they refer to as a $5 Indian. You know, he that whole Dawes Act, there's a lot of white people pretending to be Native Americans. Basically, it was like this law that was put in place where, hey, no, we're Native American too. Here's $5 and give me your land. So that's why when you see these Elizabeth Warrens coming out talking about, oh, well, I'm Native American, it's like, stop it. No, you're not. No, you're lying to the people here. You're not Native American. But there's a lot of these types that come out that say, and that's what that gentleman reminds me of. But anyhow, I'll land my plane there.
The takeaway is pretendians. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, so I mean, the bottom line with this movie was that it cost $10 million, which right. isn't a huge budget, but for the early 90s, that is a lot.
Right.
And it ended up only clearing $18 million worldwide. So
right.
it wasn't like a bomb, but I think it was a bit of a disappointment. VQ, why do you think it didn't do so well?
I don't think it had that box office draw. I don't think it had that lead actor to make people get an audience, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, again, I enjoyed it. And I think years later, Posse is much more appreciated now than it was then. And I know I'm sitting here clowning Mario Van Peebles and rapping, but I think it really has found its audience now than, because when people talked about Posse, people were like, oh man, you know, we're not feeling all this R&B on the corner. Why is this music so modern? Why does it look music video-y and all this stuff? And I'm like, man, come on, man. Don't shit on the movie like that, man. But now, The Harder They Fall, music video.
Totally.
Modern music, Django Unchained, Tupac, really? You know, I mean, hell, you got Rick Ross in that in that movie. So I think it's much more appreciated now than it was then. And I'm glad that Mario decided to make a movie other than staying in the lane that, okay, let me make another gangster drug shootout movie. Let me try my hand in a Western. So I applaud him for that.
I just want to add too that, like, in sort of along the same lines as the soundtrack, the actual sound of the movie, the sound design is pretty aggressive. We're listening to it in a surround sound. It's like most of the scenes, there's so much going on, like just like gunshots are like, when you're in New Orleans, there's like a party going on around
right.
you. When you're in the beginning in the war's happening all around you. It's like,
right.
it's pretty intense as a surround experience, I gotta say.
I said that. I was it's like, I go, I feel like I'm in the Spanish American War right now. Were things whizzing by us and stuff? It was intense.
The bullets. You're like, oh, like, damn, so painful.
You could feel it all. That's what I was saying. Yeah, it was really intense.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, I think what you said, VQ, makes sense, is that there wasn't like a strong enough leading man to get people into the theater. Right. I don't even remember this film at all coming out. But again, like I said, it wasn't really something I was into at the time. So I wasn't paying attention to it. But I really liked it. This was my first watch of it. Sebastian's seen it a couple times now, but this was my first watch. And I was like captivated the entire time. I liked what it was doing. I'm glad he chose to do something different and tell a story that needed to be told.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I mean, I think Westerns, you know, past 1970 have been a hard sell no matter what. You know, I think that just the idea of having a mostly black cast of a Western probably wasn't going to reach the biggest audience. I don't know how well it did with black audiences. It's a tough thing on two levels there, because A, people aren't seeing a lot of Westerns in the 90s, and B, now you've got an all-black Western, so all the white people are like, what? I didn't even know there were black people there.
Right. Oh, yeah. We everywhere. We all over history. Absolutely. Get used to it. Let me just say, when I went to go see Posse, it was in a packed theater when I went. And I went like early evening, and it was excitement. And so I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be number one movie. But then, you know, when you talk to your friends, you talk to, you know, other people that are in the movies like you, and you ask, hey, man, did you see Posse? Oh, man, I'm back. I don't see no Posse. And I remember the biggest crushing blow was Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Will Smith had a line dissing the movie Posse.
Oh, come on.
And I was like, oh, but Wild Wild West tanked.
That's a much bigger failure than Posse. Bigger.
That was a much, exactly. So Will Smith had to eat crow for that one. So, but I remember like a lot, like he dissed it. And I was like, oh man, that was cold, because I really thought that, you know, it's not a perfect movie, but yo, man, this movie is entertaining. It's fun. And I wish it would have became a big movie like A New Jack City and all the movies that came out at that time. But unfortunately, it didn't. But now it's become one of those movies where when you talk to people, it's like, yo, you know what? I dissed it at first, but now I appreciate it. It's one of my go-tos. I'm glad it's found its audience now, even though it took many years later. But that's the nature of art sometimes, I guess, right?
No, it has to find the audience. And I was noticing when you shared that you were watching this on social media, like everybody was just like, oh, Posse, da, 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 mm-hmm. da. Like everybody had something to say. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, so I think it's, like you said, it's having a more of a time now. We haven't for a long time gotten any really big budget Westerns. It's like, it's more independent films now that are doing Westerns or independent series or something like that. That's doing like a Western that's not so much mainstream. So it's not for everybody.
Yeah. Cause now we have the urban Western, you know, instead of horses and dirt and terrain, now you have paved streets, cars. Instead of posses, you have mafia, gangsters, whatever. You know, now, I mean, like, Untouchables for me is a Western. You know, that's a John Ford Western with a splash of Italian Western there mixed in there too, right? So, I mean, they still make Westerns, but not like going back to the time period. Other than Quentin Tarantino, who can do it and be successful at it, Western, like film noir, is a hard sell.
All right. Well, I'm going to go make some gold bullets and admire Melvin Van Peebles' cut chest and go make friends with a Pretendian.
Yeah, right.
That about does it today for Tentpole Trauma. If you like what you heard, check out our social media presence on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look for Tentpole Trauma. That was easy, wasn't it? If you like us, hit subscribe and leave us a sterling review on iTunes, if you dare. If you really like us, head over to patreon.com and get involved in one of our fabulous tiers. You'll be glad you did.
Want to communicate with Tentpole Trauma? Send an email to tentpoletrauma@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And who knows, one day you may even get your email read on one of our shows. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.